Good morning, everybody. Thank you all for coming out just before Pesach, taking a break from the scrubbing and cleaning. We have some special treats this morning. The first treat is that my parents are here, which is very nice, and it's lovely to have them here as always. And they're with us for Pesach, which is lovely too. The second treat is we're going to deal with a topic today, which is it reads like a who's who of the last 150 years, well, certainly a 100-year slot of the great and the good of the rabbinic establishment. It involves a machlokas, a dispute in halakha, an issue of hashkafa, which is why I like it in our series. Yeah, just push the table a little bit forward. Okay, very good. Thank you for that important point. We're going to see the Hasidim against the non-Hasidim, the Misnagdim. We're going to see the Maskilim against the traditionalists. It involves a court case with the IRS. And it involves a 1973 moonwalk. How many shiurim can get all of those things in at the same time? We'll see the machine matzahs bring all of those in. Let's start as an introduction with source number one, and we'll set out the history. What I want to do today is give you the history of the machine matzah controversy, and also give you some of the main halachic and hashkafic angles on it. But let's have a look. Let's start with the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer, the Rebbe of Sokachov, Rav Avram Bornstein, writing the following in the late 19th century. Look at number one. Let's use this as an introduction. Lichvod kal adakishun da'amberva. So he's writing to a community here, and he's saying the following. Hine hamored tzedek, Rebbe Moiri, mikal aschem. The rabbi of your community, va'elai, has turned to me, b'kubalna rabbi, with a great grievance. Your rabbi has turned to me with a very serious grievance. Ki kipcho et parnasasa, because they have removed his parnasa. V'garu loy mimaskarotoy, and they've taken away his money, hakavu loy, which is fixed salary, v'aishav varim, and they've done other things to him as well. Your rabbi is complaining. V'hakol machmas, and why are they getting at the rabbi? She'asar, it's a machine matzah. Because he offered, he said that machine matzahs are prohibited. That's why you sacked him. V'hinani, lahodiachem, I want to inform you, ki rabbe einai hadavar ma'od. This is a terrible thing that you've done to your rabbi, says the Avnei Nezer. Hein guf ha-hetha shel ha-machine matzahs. Because first of all, allowing machine matzahs itself, hei mashiratu et ha-morit tzedek avor sha'asa. And also, first of all, I don't agree, he says, that you should even allow machine matzahs. So first of all, your rabbi is right. They are prohibited. And second of all, shiratu et ha-morit tzedek avor sha'asa. And you sack your rabbi just because he says something is prohibited. That's what you do to your rabbi. The minute he says something is also, that's it. You're sacked. We'll get a new guy in. You can't do that. This is for two reasons. This is an incorrect behavior. Therefore, I'm warning you, says the Avnei Nezer. Ma'oid, seriously. Bring back your rabbi. Reappoint him immediately. And this evil machine matzah, custom of machine matzahs, to batlu, get rid of it immediately. Stop with the machine matzahs. Unechapel lachem al ha'avar, and you'll get atonement for the past. Uschar gadol tekabel mishamayim al ha'asid, and you'll get great reward from heaven for the future. Get rid of your machine matzahs and bring back your rabbi. Interesting. This was in Eastern Europe in the 1890s, late 19th century. So let's have a look at why is he so upset? And why are they so unhappy with the rabbi that they sacked him because he said he couldn't use machine matzah? So what I really want to do is spend 10 minutes with you, first of all, looking at the history, and then we'll look at some of the halachic issues involved. As always, there's a little bit more on the sheet that we can get through in one session, but the sheet is a little bit of a, will guide you through an annotated guide to this whole subject. So first of all, when did machine matzahs first arrive on the scene? So in 1838, the first machine matzah, the first matzah-making machine, really was a rolling machine rather than a baking machine, was invented by a fellow called Isaac Singer. Not the same Isaac Singer that invented the sewing machine in America. This Isaac Singer lived in France, and it's not Isaac Bashevis Singer, that's someone else again. This is an Isaac Singer living in the mid-19th century in France, and it was approved. It really made very little of a little splash. The local rabbis in Germany approved it, and they spread through the 1840s and 50s through Germany. Rav Shlomo Eger, who was the son of Rabbi Kiva Eger, was a rav in Posen, and he said that was fine. He allowed it. There was a letter in the Jewish Chronicle in 1853 in London, encouraging people to have these new machine matzahs because they fed the poor. People were able to afford them. We'll get to that soon. There was a big advantage. Through the 1850s, they began to spread. The Ksav Sofer, we'll see soon, who was the son of the Chasam Sofer, Rav Avram Sofer, he approved them, he adapted the machine matzahs, and he said this is a good thing. Now, when did the problem start? The problem started when the machine matzah factories hit Eastern Europe in the late 1850s. They arrived in Lvov, in Galicia, in Lemberg, and they got there the Haskama of the Aruch Lener, Rav Ettlinger, okay, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, which was a very serious approbation to have there. And they also got the Haskama of Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson, the Shaul Omeshiv. The Shaul Omeshiv is a very important figure that we're going to see again and again through this debate. He gave the approval to these machine matzahs. This was his first year as a young rabbi. I don't actually know how young he was, but it was his first year in the community of the Shaul Omeshiv. And he approved the machine matzahs, as did the Beis Din in Krakow. So everything seems fine. Everyone seems perfectly happy. But then along came this fellow, Rav Chaim Dembitzer, who called himself a Dayan, although there was some doubt as to whether he was a Dayan, and he published something called Moidah LeBeis Yisrael. And I brought you a little picture. I brought you on the side here. First of all, a picture of an early machine matzah rolling machine, okay, from the 1850s. And also a little picture of this Moidah LeBeis Yisrael. This was like a Pashkevil in the early versions of the posters. This was like a pamphlet, which was printed and distributed around in the 1850s, basically saying that these machine matzahs are absolutely not allowed. And who did he bring on his side? Flip over the page. A number of rabbonim opposed machine matzahs, and they were basically the chassidim. And we'll see why the chassidim were against it shortly. There was the Yegera Rebbe, the Chudushi Arim, the Sanza Rebbe, the Divrei Chaim, Rav Shlomo Kluger, very important figure there, of Shlomo Kluger, the Rav of Brody, came out very strongly against machine matzahs. We'll see their argument soon. And also, the Shaul Omeshiv, who supported machine matzahs, his own brother-in-law, who used to be his chavrusa, someone called Rav Zeid Mordechai Zeid Ettlinger, not to be confused with the Oracle of Ettlinger, he also came out very seriously against them. And this caused a big family machlokas. They were going to publish a book together, and they fell out because of this machlokas, and they never published the book together. And this really pitted, in many ways, the Hasidim against the non-Hasidim in this early stage of proceedings. So what happened? In 1859, the Shaul Omeshiv produced a response to this pamphlet, which I brought you a little copy of here, called the Bittel Modah, nullifying the warning. And basically he said that it's nonsense, it's not true. Half the things that they said in this initial pamphlet against machine matzahs were not even true. And he gives counter arguments. If you look for a second at the very last page of the sheet, just turn to the appendix just for a second. So I've brought you a little summary, which was very helpfully I found in a source sheet by one of my friends and colleagues, Rav Shimshon Nagel, who also gives shirim sometimes at the OU Israel Center, and I asked his permission. He said I could reproduce this. But basically, these are the arguments for and against. Some of the people said that those who prohibited the matzah making machines had never even seen the matzah making machines. We'll see the sooner they admit that themselves. And we'll see lots of arguments. Some people claimed that it was the German rabbis who approved all these newfangled things. And other people counted, well, lots of things the German rabbis have approved are fine. Don't get it, the German rabbis are also Yoreh Shamayim. Some people will see said that the matzahs have to be round and these matzahs are square. We'll look at all of these arguments, but you can look at this yourself afterwards and see the kind of issues that were raised in this initial stage of the machlokas, of the dispute. Turn back to page 2 for a second, and let's just finish off the history and see where we are. Basically, the Maskilim then got involved. A number of other serious rabbonim were brought on in favor of the machine matzahs. For example, the Oruch Lener, the Rav of Danzig, Rav Yisrael Lipschitz, the Tiferes Yisrael. And these people wrote very much in favor of machine matzahs. In fact, the Tiferes Yisrael says when he saw the machine matzah machine, the new machine, he wanted to make a bracha, Mechadesh Chadashim, that God makes all these wonderful new things, like machine matzah machines, And they clearly came out very strongly in favor. The Maskilim got involved. There was a newspaper called Hamagid, and that produced a whole article there about how the Sholem Meshev was taken to court for libel, that they accused that he made up things against the people who opposed machine matzahs. And eventually this settled down very much into a clear machlokas between the Hasidim, on the one hand, who were against machine matzahs, and the Misnagdim, who were in favor of machine matzahs. Things died down a little bit until the 1890s, and then it all blew up all over again. Sometimes these debates and disputes, people think in every generation they're the first people to think. It's like the Indian hair shaitels, that every 25 years or so, somebody realizes that the shaitels are made from hair in India, and they think there's an issue of avodah zara, even though the whole thing was discussed 25 years earlier. But in the 1890s, it all blew up again, and again, it settled clearly down these lines. In Dvinsk, Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk, the Or Sameach, the Meshech Chochma, came out in favor of the machine matzahs. The Rogachova, Rav Rosen, Rav Yosef Rosen, who was the Hasidisha Rav there, came out against machine matzahs. Moshe Mordechai Epstein in Slobodka came out in favor of machine matzahs, and other people came out against. Interestingly, the Mishnah Brura, who was not a Chassid, if we could ask people to turn off their phones, it's helpful if we can work out how to do that. The Mishnah Brura and the Orach HaShulchan, who were not Hasidim, don't even mention it. Interestingly, they kind of avoid the whole issue in their discussions. We're not sure exactly why they didn't mention it. Maybe they just didn't want to get involved in the Machlokas, and therefore they didn't mention it, but neither of them mention it. And then there are other people as well who maybe on the Hasidish side who were a little bit more in favor of it, the Marasham, Rav Shalom Mordechai Shwadron. But basically, by the late 19th century in Europe, things had more or less died down. And you had the two clear sides. One side was pro-machine matzahs. One side was against machine matzahs. Turn now to Eretz Yisrael. At the beginning of the 20th century, a machine matzah plant opened up in 1903 in Eretz Yisrael. And at the beginning, it was very uncontroversial. The Purushim, the non-Hasidic old Yishuv, were quite in favor, as you'd expect them, more from a Lithuanian background. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, Rav Shmuel Salant had no problem with the machine matzahs at all, and the machine matzah factories were working in Eretz Yisrael. And then in 1909, the Hasidim sent letters to Eretz Yisrael. The Rogachova and the Sokachova sent letters to Eretz Yisrael saying that under no circumstances should machine matzahs be allowed, and then began the war of the Pashkevilim on the walls of Yerushalayim, those for, those against. This remains really a position in Eretz Yisrael that pretty much the Hasidim will have hand matzahs and the non-Hasidim will have machine matzahs. But the debate died down. Move over to America now. In the 1880s, in 1886 actually, a gentleman called Dov Ber Manischewitz, who Mr. Isaacs over here informed me earlier, there's a little bit of local interest. His great-grandfather apparently brought over Ber Manischewitz to be a tutor for his son. Was it for his son? He was assured that Manischewitz was an excellent tutor, and he brought him along. Unfortunately, he turned out not to be such a great tutor. He turned out to be a better shochet, and it turns out a better matzah maker. And Manischewitz was sacked from his tutor position with Mr. Isaac's great-great-grandparents or whatever it was. And then he turned to something else, which was making matzahs. Manischewitz was originally, very interestingly, from Salant. And he was very much a Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanta. And he came over to America in the 1880s. Really was very unopposed, because most of the community in America in the early days of the American Jewish community were non-Hasidic. And so since the non-Hasidim in Europe were pretty much in favor of the machine matzahs, Manischewitz there had a pretty easy ride. He opened up a factory, and actually one of the major supporters of his factory was someone called Zachary Yosef Rosenfeld. Rav Zachary Yosef Rosenfeld was a Rav of St. Louis who actually built the first urban Eruv in America in the 1890s, which was also a big controversy and very much opposed, as all Eruvim usually are. He very much supported this and wrote papers about how machine matzahs were definitely kosher for Pesach, and Manischewitz did pretty well. I brought you a little picture on the right-hand side there of the Manischewitz factory being advertised. His sons took over in the early 20th century, and they were experts at marketing. They also took out a lot of patents. I even brought you in the footnotes. In footnote 22, you can go online later and download the original 1916 Manischewitz Matzah machine patent, number 1,169,555. You can look at how he made his Matzah machine. And he had a lot of patents. It was quite remarkable. He innovated an electric eye that counted the number of matzahs at a rate of 600 a minute. He had a gas-fired oven. The matzahs were rolled and shaped. He advertised them as square, although interestingly, in 1942, after Pearl Harbor, they produced that Pesach V-shaped matzahs for victory in America, which is just a little bit of trivia as to how Manischewitz worked there. And they were experts at marketing. They were, by the 1920s, they were producing 1.25 million matzahs per day when they were working at top volume. They advertised, I brought you a little in 2023 here in footnote 23, they advertised their factory as a temple of kashrus, a palace of cleanliness, a gigantic structure of steel and glass overflowing with light, air, and sunshine. And they said that no human hand touches these matzahs in their manufacture, which was a selling point, as we'll see, that one of the arguments of those who opposed machine matzahs, hand matzahs rather, is that they're not very hygienic. We'll come to that in a little bit. And basically, in the 1930s, on the 50th anniversary of Manischewitz setting up, they produced this whole long list. I brought you on the side a copy of it, of rabbis who support Manischewitz. Head of the list was Rav Kook. Rav Kook actually has in one of his letters to his son, says, we're coming to you for Pesach, and we hope you'll be getting Manischewitz matzahs. So we know Rav Kook was in favor, but other people as well were in favor. Rav Meir Shapiro of Lublin, Rav Meir Hildesheimer of Berlin, many of the rabbis from Israel, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Rav Chalap, etc. So in many ways, Manischewitz became a very much established brand. Something that actually helped them as well is they set up a yeshiva in Yerushalayim called the Manischewitz Yeshiva, and this gave them something of a stempel of authority that people knew about the Choshev of Manischewitz Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. Unfortunately, this got them into some trouble with the IRS in 1948 because they were making donations to the yeshiva in Israel and writing it off as a business expense for making matzahs. And the IRS took them to court in America, and Manischewitz won. And they proved that funding the yeshiva was a legitimate marketing exercise in promoting the matzahs. And they actually won the case in 1948 against the IRS as well. Perhaps to top off all of their marketing, in 1973, when Jean Terman walked on the moon, he said, "Man, oh Manischewitz," when he saw the site on the moon. And I think that must be the kind of the apex of the Manischewitz marketing system. Yes. Right. And if you turn over, we're now finished with the history, but if you turn over to page 4, you'll see a little bit of a picture there of the Rabbanim, the Talmidei Yeshiva Manischewitz in Yerushalayim. On the left there, you've got Dov Ben Manischewitz, who founded it, and on the right is his son, Tzvi Hirsch Manischewitz. So it was a whole family business and very much a name. I was more familiar with the grape juice than the matzahs when I was, you know, growing up a little bit, Manischewitz. But I'm sure Manischewitz is still a major matzah producer in America, and there are millions and millions and millions of matzahs. Now, so much for the history. So you see it settled down into a very clear dispute between one side and the others. Even today in Eretz Yisrael, as I mentioned, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that when he was young, he remembers it being a very clear dispute that some people only ate machine matzahs, some people only ate hand matzahs, and they were very vociferous in support of each side. Let's have a look at what their arguments were, and still are to some degree. Let's look at page number 4. Why did people oppose machine matzahs? What's the problem with making a machine matzah? So there are basically three problems, three areas where there are halachic concerns. One of them is this concept of lishma, that the matzah has to be made specifically for the mitzvah of matzah, and we have to work out how a machine can do that. We'll talk about that in a minute. One of them is the question, which in the early days was, were these matzahs really kosher lePesach at all, or were they really chometz? And a third issue, which is really much a driver, was the hashkafa involved. Should we be bringing in these newfangled things like machine matzahs, or is this just the thin end of the wedge, and today machine matzahs, tomorrow silk talitim, and next week, who knows what's going to be with, we're going to have mixed family seating in the shul. Okay. So we'll see. Let's look at page 4, please, and we'll have a look at the arguments and the halachic issues for and against. First of all, in the early days, they used to recycle the dough. Now they don't do this anymore, but some of the early arguments against machine masters is as follows. Machines cannot make circles. At least in the mid-1800s, they couldn't make circles. I remember even, this is completely irrelevant, but interesting nonetheless, I used to be a lawyer and we used to work for Cadbury's. Many years ago, when they used to make something called a Swiss roll, okay, which was like, you know, sort of cake rolled up into a whatever with filling in the middle. And I remember going to the factory as a lawyer. I had to do work there, and the entire factory was mechanized. We're talking about the late 1990s. The entire factory was mechanized, apart from one table. It was in Liverpool, actually. It was one table that had hundreds of women rolling these Swiss rolls. And I said to them, like, this is very strange. Why do you have a 99% mechanized factory? And then people, this is because the machines cannot roll things. It's very hard for machines, they said, to work in circles and to work to roll things up. Maybe they invented it now, but that's a different question. But the early machines could not make circles. So what did they do? They used to make squares, okay? And then they used to get people to cut the squares into circles, and they just throw the dough back into the machine after they cut the corners off the squares. And of course, that dough was recycled again and again and again, and that dough would easily become chometz. They stopped doing that pretty early, and they decided they're better off having them square. So that was an early concern which quickly went away, but that was something that they talked about at the beginning. The biggest concern is this issue of lishma. And let's talk about this now. The Torah itself says that matzahs can't just be eaten. You can't just have regular matzahs on Seder night. The matzahs have to be shmura. What does this mean, shmura matzahs? Well, what this means practically is that they're four times the price when you buy them in the supermarket. But halachically, what does this mean? Number two, ushmartem et matzahs. You must guard the matzahs. Because on this very day, says God, I took you out of Egypt. And you should, just like you guard the matzahs, you have to keep this day. The for an eternal law, forever you should keep Pesach. What does it mean you must guard the matzot? Would you have to stand and watch them from the first moment that the wheat is picked? Look at number three. So it says the Mishnah, the following types of matzah can be used on Pesach. Chalos Tzeda, Urikike Nazir. So if you have Chalot Todah, what's Chalot Todah? So when you brought a korban, when you brought a sacrifice, so certain sacrifices had matzahs attached to them. The sacrifice of the Todah, okay, the korban Todah, and the sacrifice of the Nazir, when the Nazir became pure, involved bringing matzahs. And these were real kosher Pesach, non-chometic matzahs. The korban Todah also had chalas, which were chomets, but they had matzahs as well. Asan la'atzmai, if you made those matzahs for the purpose of the korban, not for Pesach, ein yotzim bahem. They don't work on Seder night. Like, you can't use them. Asan lim kor bashuk, but if you just make matzahs to sell in the marketplace, and whoever buys them will buy them for whatever. People buy them, they'll use them for Seder night. Other people will buy them, they use them for the korban, yotzim bahem. Then that's fine. So why is there a problem using a matzah which was designed for the korban? Again, if you made the matzah specifically for Pesach, great. If you made it specifically for the korban, no good. If you made it stam, just to sell in the shop, that whoever buys it will use it for whatever, that's fine. What's the issue here? So look at the Gemara number 4. The Gemara explains, Chalas Todah Rikike Nazir. Minani Mili, where do we know this from, that you can't use a matzah which you bought for a korban, or you made for a korban? Amar Rabba, Rabba says the following, Da Amar Kra Ushmatem Et HaMatzahs. This pasuk, you have to guard the matzahs. Matzah HaMishtameret L'Shem Matzah. It has to be matzah which is guarded, which is kept, l'shem matzah. It has to have this certain kind of matzah designation. Yatzazol, which excludes the other kind of matzah, she'ein mishtamarit l'shem matzah. The other kind of matzah was not made for matzah, ela l'shem zevach. It was made for a korban, and that doesn't work. The matzah has to be made for matzah. Okay, what does that mean? It has to be made for matzah. So Rashi and the Rambam have a major machlokas on this. The Rashi in number 5, we'll see, understands that it means it has to be made with a certain kavanah. And this is where our issue begins with the machine matzahs. Look at number 5. Rashi understands this Gemara, Shmatim et ha-matzahs, Avilei shmira l'shem matzah, you have to make it l'shem matzah. Kol shimur she'ata m'shemred shelo tachmitz. Whenever you're guarding the wheat and the flour, etc., they shouldn't become chometz. Hit kavein l'shem matzah shel mitzvah. Hit kavein.
You have to have a kavanah. You have to have an intention that this is matzah shel mitzvah. It's what's going on in your head that makes it kosher, not just what's going on in the factory. So Rashi understands that the issue of shmura matzah is that all the way through this process, people have been saying, this is for matzah, this the kavanah is for the matzah on Seder night. All the way, and in fact, if you go to a hand-baking factory, matzah factory, you'll see from the second they throw the water in the flour, and they're making the matzahs, they're saying the whole time, the shein matzahs mitzvah, the shein matzahs mitzvah, the shein matzahs mitzvah. They're saying it constantly all the way through the process until they shove it in the oven, the shein matzahs mitzvah. So what you're paying for is people to say l'shem matzah mitzvah, l'shem matzah mitzvah, etc. And they've got this kavana going. That's following the shita of Rashi. The Rambam says, no, lo nechon. The Rambam says, number six, u'shmatim es ha-matzahs. Kalaymar, what does it mean, this shmirish? What does shmura matzah mean? His haru b'matzah v'shamru ota mikol tzad chimut. Make sure there's not even the slightest possibility that it becomes chometz. But he doesn't make any mention of any kind of mental kavana. What does shmura matzah mean according to the Rambam? It's super kosher in the sense that there's no chance at all that it became chometz. It's been guarded especially well. Okay, fine. Now, the Orach HaShulchan points out in number 7 that according to this, Rambam will say that you should eat shmura matzahs all the way through Yom, all the way through Chag. Because it's nothing to do with Seder night, it's nothing to do with the mitzvah of matzah. It's to do with the matzah itself. And since shmura matzah for the Rambam means that the matzah is super duper protected against chometz, you should eat shmura matzah the whole of Pesach. According to Rashi, it's really only relevant to Seder night because it's the issue of kavana for the mitzvah rather than the matzah itself. Now, do people eat shmura matzahs all through Chag from the beginning to the end? Well, some people do and some people don't, because we'll see in a minute the Shulchan Aruch passes like Rashi, that it's really only necessary and essential for Seder night itself, because he's going to pass him the issue of the Kavanah, but other people are a machmir for the Rambam, and they eat Shmura Matzah through the whole of Pesach on the basis that it's something to do with the Matzah itself. Now, fine. So, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, just over the page, please, if you look over the page in a second. If you look just for a second, before we go to 8, 9, and 10, just look at 11, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Ein Lashin Matzah's Mitzvah V'loi Oifin Oysa Al Yidei Einu Yehudi. And we'll see where he's coming from in a minute. You're not allowed to use a non-Jew to make your matzah's mitzvah, the matzah for Seder night. And you're not allowed to use a cheresh, which is someone who's a deaf mute, who we don't exactly know what they're thinking because they can't communicate. Maybe today it's a little bit different with a cheresh because we can communicate with a deaf mute through other ways today. A shoter is someone who is mentally imbalanced to the point that they really don't know what they're doing. Okay, and a katan is a child. All of these people, we assume, do not have das. They do not have mental intention. And the Shulchan Aruch clearly paskens, like the Shita of Rashi, that the only matzahs you can use for Seder night are matzahs which are shmura. Shmura means what? They've had the proper kavana. You need people who can think. A non-Jew can think, but they're not thinking about mitzvahs. A child, a cheresh, and a shota can't think at all. Go back for a second to number 8, and you'll see that this actually itself was a machlokas. This was a serious debate. If you look in the She'iltas says, Goy, Ocheresh, Shoyse V'Katan, Delav B'nei Shimon Ninhu, Eino Lasha Le'isa. You cannot use, says the She'iltas, from the time of the Gaonim, a non-Jew or a deaf mute or a person who is mentally unstable or a child, you cannot use them for making matzahs because they don't have the necessary kavana. And even if the Jew baked the matzah, he says at the end here, Goy Cheresh, Shoyse V'Katan, Afa Gavda Afinhu Yisrael, Baradei, even if a Jew were to put it in the oven. The Avid Leishimu B'Shah Safiya, and they pick it up from their baking stage, Loi Nafi Kidei Chavosa. You're not Yotza. It doesn't work on Seder night. And the Rosh actually brings this down as a machlokas. One side says that you can use a non-Jew and supervise them. What if the Jew's supervising? What if the Jew's saying the Shein Mitzvah's Master? Yeah. There's no reason why a woman can't make masters. Women are chayiv in eating masters, and therefore they can make masters. And they certainly have das. As far as I'm aware, there's no reason why there should be a problem with that. The question is, what if a Jew is supervising this non-Jew? The Jew is standing next to him saying, listen, Chris, you are putting this in the oven, and you're putting it in the shame matzah's mitzvah. Yeah, you don't know what that means, but I'm telling you, especially for Seder night, do you understand what I'm saying? Yes, sir, no problem, stick it in the oven. It does that work or not? So the Rosh brings two views. One view is that it does work. One view is that it doesn't work. And the Ritva actually picks this up and says, I don't really understand why this doesn't work. What's the problem here? Look at the Ridvan number 10. V'chein nira medivrei bal halacha. He brings the Bahag, who agrees with the She'iltas, shekasav zeh l'shona, lishad goi cheris shaytiv akasun, loy nafik yidei chavah. You cannot use a non-Jew to bake your matzahs. It just doesn't work. Aval moiri Rabbi Aaron Halevi, which is probably the author of the Sefer HaChinuch, we're not sure, but he quotes his teacher, Hayadan lahakel. He really wanted to be lenient. The sagi be Yisrael omed agaba. Surely it's enough if a Jew stands next to them. The loy boy asiya l'shem matzah. This is very important. It doesn't say that you have to make the matzahs l'shem matzah. Rak shimur l'shem matzah. It just means you have to guard them l'shem matzah. The hachiksev. That's why it says u'shmatem et matzahs. The kain v'kach hayadan moiri hara. And this is what my Rebbe used to say, that in theory you can have a Jew supervising a non-Jew. La halacha v'loy l'maisa. But he wouldn't rely on that in practice. Meaning he used to teach that this makes sense to him, that actually there's no reason why you have to have a Jew. You can have a non-Jewish matzah baker, but he wouldn't rely on it. He wouldn't pass him that way. He didn't want to get involved in the trouble. Halacha l'maisa, the Shulchan Aruch we saw, says that you have to have a Jew doing it, not a non-Jew. The Mishnah Berurah brings in number 12, that if you really have no other choice, if you have no other option, you can rely on the other view that we saw was another view, that as long as the Jew is standing next to the non-Jewish matzah baker saying, this is for Seder night, please put it in for Seder night, that's good enough. Although we try not to rely on that if we possibly can. Now, how does that relate to machines? So what is the difference between a machine, in terms of this halacha, and a non-Jewish person? So on the one hand, maybe a machine is better than a non-Jewish baker, because a non-Jewish baker might have his own mind on whatever it is. A machine has no mind. Probably. Okay? You don't know these days. And I'll tell you a true story. I bought a new car, a new Hyundai, recently, and it's got lots of bells and whistles and gadgets, and it talks. It's got lots of sensors. I was driving through Jerusalem about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I went over a big pothole in the road. Big bump in the car. I actually thought that might cause a problem, but in the end it was fine. Just carried on driving. I got a phone call through to the car about 90 seconds later saying, hello sir, this is Hyundai. Your car has just told us that it went over a big bump and it's fetched. Your car is fetching. We wanted to check that everything was okay. So, you know, I now have a machine that does fetch and have its own opinion on things. But back in the day, certainly machines couldn't do that. So maybe a machine is better because it can't have the wrong kavana. On the other hand, maybe a machine is worse because if you tell the non-Jewish person, this is what you need to be thinking, and they say, no problem, that's what I'm thinking, that's good enough for me, then at least you know that they can attune their mind to do what you tell them, but the machine is just neutral, so maybe the machine is worse than the non-Jew. Also, the next question is, when you're making the matzahs, is that called making matzahs, when a machine makes a matzah? Or is that what's called koyach sheni? So you're pressing a button and something happens which makes something happen which makes the matzah. Is that called you make, is that called even made? Is that asiyah or not asiyah? Or do we say, of course, it's fine. The guy who presses the button, he's the guy making the matzahs. Why do I care if he presses the button and this whirs this, which turns this, which does that? It's all happening from the guy who presses the button. He has the kavana, he presses the button. Shalom al Yisrael, everything's fine. And you can see that a number of people have gone different ways on this. Some people will say machines can't have the right kavana, and it's not called making the matzah. Other people will say it is. Interestingly, early days, the Maharsham, when he writes on this in number 13, Ve'echad ha'tamim shelehem, she'i'ev she'latet behem yidei chavos b'matzah mipnei she'ein ha'matzah al yidei adam. One of the arguments he brings here is that people had against machine matzahs is it's not a human act. V'nasem elav, it's happening automatically. V'damin ha'matzah cheris shoshes v'katan, it's like something being made by one of these people who has no proper kavana. She'ein behem das, they have no understanding of what's going on. V'hagon rev Yosef Shalom, this is the Sholem Meshiv, the imoy, and those who are with him, the kama gedolim, heidu sheham machine sovev al yidei kama bnei adam. And this is very important, that the early machines actually had a lot of human activity in them. And even though there was a machine doing this, there were people kind of pushing that and shoving that and doing that. Hamagalgalim b'hagalgel, they are actually making the machine go round. The loy nifzak koch adam, ulechein loy mikra koch kocho. So actually, this may be more of a problem now in our machines than it was back when they were debating it in the 19th century, because our machines are now 100% automated. There are no people standing outside pushing this and shoving that. And in fact, there are those, Rav Zalman Melamed writes, that actually he's less happy about modern machine matzahs than the old Manischewitz back in the day machine matzahs, because they're more and more and more mechanized. And there comes a point, he says, when you're not really making it at all. On the issue of das, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, over to page 6, he was quite comfortable. He said it's the person who turns it on. That's the relevant issue, and we don't need the machine to think of anything. And that's basically where that machlokas lies. But that is the real central issue on machine matters, is the question of lishma. Do we say that the mitzvah of lishma is to have kavana? Because don't forget, the Rambam said it's not even that. According to the Rambam, Rav Soloveitchik points out, the machine matters are 100% fine. Because machine matters, shmira, according to the Rambam, is just to make sure there's absolutely no chometz there. It's not an issue of kavana at all. So there, it's not a problem. We'll talk about that right now. But if you go like Rashi, which is how the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskan, which is that the shmura means kavana, then you have the issue as to whether machines have the right kavana or don't have the right kavana. So that's point number one. Point number two is, do machine matzahs make kosher Pesach matzah, or do they make chometz matzah? There is such a thing as chometz matzah. I remember, I still don't understand how this can be allowed, but many matzah factories make chometz stick matzah all through the year. I remember Rakuzen's, when I was growing up, they have their chometz matzahs and their Pesach stick matzahs. I think they have different colored boxes, one's blue and one's red or something like that. But, you know, frankly, when the people who are selling the matzahs at Tesco's or Sainsbury's or the local non-Jewish supermarket, they don't really understand what's what, and the people coming to buy don't always understand what's what. And I'm sure that many people have bought chometz matzahs thinking they were good for Pesach. But early on in the machine matzah debate, one of the things they accuse machine matzahs of is the chometz. It just doesn't work. Why would they say that? Well, there are a few things that add to the problem of chometz. One of them is heat. The hotter it is, the warmer it is, the more likely it is to be in chometz. One of them is that if you leave things standing, say chazal, they start to ferment. You have to constantly move, and if you go to a hand matzah factory, you'll see they're always manipulating the dough, throwing it this way, throwing it that way. That stops the chometz. And one of them is time. Another one is ingredients, which we talked about, but that's not relevant for here. Chazal were very concerned that you have to really guard against chometz. Look at number 14. V'shavin she'ein lashim et ha'isa v'poishrin. Everybody agrees that you can't make matzahs with lukewarm water. You have to use very cool water. And in fact, the halacha is they take the water out the day before, they leave it overnight to cool. It's called mayim shalanu, mayim which rested overnight. Okay, not mayim shalanu as in our water, although that's already in the Gemara, it has a whole like play on words on that there are people who thought it meant our water, not that. Mayim shalanu as in the word malon, and it has to be cool. So the Gemara says, really? Mayim shalanu menachas, why is this different from the menachas? From again, from things which are made for korbanos into matzah. That's now, as we see, kol ha-menachas nilushos, the poishrim. You can make matzahs for the korbanos with warm water, lukewarm water. Just watch it. Just be careful that it doesn't become chometz. Why are we more concerned when it comes to Pesach matzahs than korban matzahs? So the Gemara answers, im amru bezrizin. Korban matzahs are made by kohanim. The kohanim are zrizin. They're very careful. Yom Rubashain is reason, but the people working in the matzah factories, how careful are they? You don't know, and we'll come on to that later. And therefore, we take extra precautions that when we're making matzahs for Pesach, because the people who are making them are not necessarily the most careful people, we don't take any risks that anything might become chometz. And that's indeed what Rav Shlomo Kluger wrote. If you see here, and I'm not going to read 15 and 16, but he makes a number of arguments, and he says, listen, when it comes to hand matzahs, we're constantly manipulating the matzahs, throwing them around the dough. Machine matzahs, how do I know if what the machine does is as good as what the human hand does? Machines are not human beings. Remember my story from the Cadbury's factory back in Liverpool? Human beings do things differently to machines. And therefore, maybe the machines don't do what it takes to keep the matzahs from becoming chometz, number one. Number two, he was concerned that crumbs might stay in the system. And number three, he says, don't the machines get hot? If the machines get hot, then that's going to cause chometz. In fact, the Sanzer Rebbe was very clear on this in 1858, looking number 17. Hinei ra'iti tshuvas ga'oniz manenu shehizkimu la'asor. I have seen the response of many of the current generation, which say you can't eat machine matters. But sadku ma'oy b'divreihem. I mean number 17, and they're absolutely right. Dai la'asor b'zeh b'mashikosef agon ma'reinu arav Mordechai zeh. Sherab einav ki e eshali gror hatev hanidbakbo. You can't clean them properly, he says. These old matzah machines, you can't get them clean. Stuff gets caught in the crevices, etc. The kama michsholim yuchal abobazer. There's so many problems that can come out of using these matzahs. Well, lachem b'derech hechlet, I'm absolutely clear. Oyne lachem, and I'm telling you, ki ha'oise matzahs al kli zeh hu chomet gomor. If you make matzahs using these machines, it is chomet gomor. It is absolute clear chomet without any question at all. Now, of course, the machines they were using then are not the machines that they use now. And some issues have got a lot better. In the chometz issue, they do clean the machines, and they're absolutely sparklingly clean now, and they're very carefully made, etc. So those problems have largely gone away, and we'll see at the end, nobody really says today that machine matzahs are chometz. I do know people who eat machine matzahs that say hand matzahs could be chometz, okay? That's a different question, okay? We'll get to that at the end. But nobody really says machine matzahs are chometz anymore. That problem has largely gone away. But the first issue that I mentioned of lishma, that problem has not gone away. And maybe it's even getting worse as the machines get more intelligent. Maybe that gets more mechanized, it becomes more of a problem. But one of the issues, the major issues was hashkofa. Go to page 7, please. When it comes to hashkofa, there were really 4 issues that were raised at the time. First of all, there were a number of people that were worried that machine matzahs is just another example of reform changing things and creeping. And again, for us, that seems a bit strange now, 150 years on, but you have to remember, back in the day, things were changing very fast in certain communities. The layout of shuls was changing, the position of the bima was changing, women and men seating was changing, and machine matzahs just is another example. And therefore, many people were concerned this was a Western European reform innovation creeping into Eastern Europe. Look at Rav Shlomo Kluger in the 1850s. Ein nilri la'asot chadashot bizman hazeh. I don't think we should be doing anything new today. B'shum oifen ba'oilam. In any way whatsoever. And by the way, it's very interesting because one of the people supporting machine matzahs was the Ksav Sofer, who was the son of the Chasam Sofer, and the Chasam Sofer was the perhaps most famous voice in the early 1800s saying, Chadash Asa Min HaTorah, you can't have any new innovations today. Interestingly, his son, we'll see why later, actually grudgingly accepted machine matzahs. But Rav Shlomo Kluger says, I don't think we should be doing anything new. U'bador azeh kol ha-mosif goreah. In our generation, whoever tries to add anything is really taking away. How can this generation be any better than the last one? And even if we had no halakhic reason to question machine matzahs at all, even if they were spitz perfect, we'd still say you can't eat them. We're just not prepared to do anything new. And this is the hashkafic point that was very, very strong in the 1850s. The Avnei Nezer makes a similar point. By the way, the Sholem Meshiv comes back at him and says to him, so you can't get on a train? According to you, you can't do anything new. So you better walk. Don't get on a train. Rav Shlomo Kluger wrote back to him and says, don't be ridiculous. That's not the same thing at all. Of course you can get on a train. I'm comparing it more to, let's change the style of the talit. Instead of having a classical talis, let's have a modern kind of silk scarf-like talis or whatever. That's more of the issue, because getting on a train is neither here nor there. This is a Jewish ritual object, which you're changing, and I'm very concerned about that, which is an interesting point. The Avnei Nezer, who wrote fiercely against him in the 1890s, the next generation, look in 1919, he says it is the following. Michtavo yiani b'davar machine matzahs. I've received your letter about machine matzahs. And he's completely against them. He says, "Ha'amnam ki loy ra'iti ha'machine me'olam." I've never seen the machines, and I'm frankly not interested in seeing them. I don't even need to see them. I know that it's prohibited without seeing them. V'chol zot mechaynim ma'od divrei hagon mikutna. That's the Yeshua's Malchai of Kutna. It's absolutely clear that they're prohibited. Ki ma'achas ha'agdolim shelevneinu asru. Since the last generation of gedolim prohibited them. And they pointed out the wickedness of the people who allow them. I don't care why they allow them. They must have had good reasons for everything them, and they're not allowed. Who is going to change the boundary lines that the earlier generations placed? They were like angels compared to us. And they're going to get burnt. They can't do that. You're not allowed to change them. I want to remind you. And I was going to tell you something else. I think every balabai should be making his own matzahs. Why are you going to a matzah seller at all? One person's making matzahs. Manischewitz is in town. This is terrible. Everybody should be making their own matzahs. Now you begin to realize why the people who supported machine matzahs supported them, saying, Gewalt, everybody's making their, Chaim Moshe is making his own hand matzahs. I'm going to eat those matzahs. I want to ask Diane Lopian, as we were walking down the street in London, does he eat hand matzahs or machine matzahs? And he said, machine matzahs. And I said, why? He says, I don't like chometz at my seder. They were his words. Okay? Because every Chaim Yankel is making his own hand matzahs. So the Avnei Nezer said, yeah, but that's the way we always did it. And by the way, they used to make the matzahs after the Zman Issa Chometz. That was the ideal time to make the matzahs, afternoon on Erev Pesach. In fact, even on the night, you could even make matzahs on the night of Seder itself. Because you can bake on Yom Tov, right? So you get hot matzahs straight out of the oven on Seder night. Hot, soft, thick matzahs back in the day, with a bit of shawarma for Korban Pesach and a nice piece of lettuce for Maror. You're sorted, okay? Sounds like a good deal. So there were many people who were concerned about reform and also making your own matzahs. And I brought you in 20 and 21. The Mechilta even brings from when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, v'tsoinu bakar mikne kaved ma'od, they left with a lot of sheep and cattle. Tsoinu bakar, ein le'ela tsoinu bakar, says the Mechilta, I only know about cattle and sheep. Minayin l'rabbis gemalim v'chamoyrin, how do I know that they had horses? They had donkeys, they had camels, v'sosim, and horses. Hamad loyma mikne kaved ma'od. They left with lots of animals. So says the Mechilta, Tzururois b'sim lotam al shichmam. So why did they carry the matzahs on their own shoulders? You have enough animals to take all your matzahs with you. Kiloi haya b'yadam ma litol. Didn't they have anything to carry the matzahs? Ela melamed shehayu mechavavim et ha-matzah. It's a mitzvah. They wanted to carry it themselves. They loved them. The Rosh brings... the Torah brings in the name of his father, number 21. Ba'alei ma'aseh v'chassidim machmirim al atzman kegoinim, ha-machmirim v'lashim ba'atzman v'oisim k'shehihi amdamrinim. Mar docha shal ani, hu masik v'ishto yosek. You should be like a poor person. They don't have people to do things for them. It's lechem oini. You should make your own matzahs. Lechein mitzvah al kol adam lehishtagel ba'asiyat ha-matzavah. And that's why they have all these chaburas in Yerushalayim. Come and make your own matzahs. Yeah, I got one of these, WhatsApps. Say, come join a chabura and make your own matzahs. Which I once did this. It was, they had some professional matzah bakers there doing the real thing, and they had all these kollel guys kind of making a good show of it, and besides doing this and the other. It's beautiful, it's very nice, as long as you know what you're doing. V'chein haya noeg adoini avim harosh, and this is what my father the Rosh did. Haya mishtadil behem v'oimid ali asan, he used to go to the matzah baking, do it himself, stand over them, etc., etc. The chassidim have a lot of mystical ideas with this. The idea of drawing the water, the heat and exertion of you making the matzahs is meant to be like an atonement, a kapora, like the heat of the oven, for like going through, instead of going through Gehenna, you can go through the matzah baking factory. So there really are Kabbalistic ideas that come in into all of this, and you begin to understand why the idea of a machine, of Manischewitz making your matzah, to a lot of people was anathema. It was like, how can this be? This matzah making process is itself critical and central. Go over the page. Another hashgraphic issue, please. Page 8. It's a lot of people said, I'm sorry, matzahs have to be round. There is no such thing as a square matzah. Forget a V-shaped matzah for victory, okay? There's no such thing as a square matzah. Where did they get that from? The pasuk says, V'yodfu es abatzek, they baked the dough, asher hotziu mimitzrayim, ugot matzot. And this word, ugot, many of the Meforshim bring down, means round, dafka, and not square. I brought you in footnote 40 some of the Meforshim that talk about this. Ibn Ezra talks about this, and they talk about what were the shapes of the matzahs they used for the korbanos. Were they circular? Were they square? Interesting, the lechem hapanim, the bread that they made for the shulchan, that was square. That was not circular. So some things were circular, some things were square. There's even a whole connection with Og, Melech HaBashan, of Og and Uga, etc. I'm not getting into that now. So that was one argument. Others dismissed this. The Ksav Sofer says that's ridiculous, I'm not interested. He said, and I quote, "In the merit of the four-cornered matzahs, may God redeem us from the four corners of the earth." Okay? So he made a special play for square matzahs as well. And the last hashkafic point that was made against machine matzahs was that it's taking away jobs from the people who were matzah bakers. Mechanization is causing poverty, and therefore Rav Shlomo Kluge argued that these people at Pesach time rely on those jobs baking matzahs, and they're going to have those jobs taken away. Now that's a very interesting argument. Does mechanization take away jobs or create jobs? And of course that's not just an argument for matzahs, and that's not just an argument that rabbis are involved in, that's an economic argument generally. On the other hand, these machine matzahs, we'll see soon, were incredibly cheap compared to hand matzahs, and therefore it helped poor people. And it's not clear exactly how you make that balance between helping the poor and not helping the poor, which does it better, the machine matzahs or the hand matzahs, but that's an argument that was significantly made. Let's look now, just for the last few minutes of the shiur, we've looked at all the arguments against machine matzahs. Whether it's lishma, whether it's that they were chometz or could have been chometz, whether it's the hashkafic issues, they need to be round, that we need to help the poor, it looks like reform. What about the arguments in favor of machine matzahs? So the first one was cost. They cost a lot less than hand matzahs. As I mentioned, you know, Manischewitz is turning off 1 million matzahs a day. They can obviously be produced incredibly cheaply. And there were many people who argued that that actually helped the poor a great deal. They could buy their own matzahs on Pesach. Other people said, look, the quality of machine matzahs is so much better. And I want to read you, actually, in English, the Ksav Sofer's piece in number 23, when he grudgingly accepted machine matzahs because he, even though he was not in favor of innovation, his father was the significant opposer of innovation, but look at what he says in 23. "I did not want to get involved in this issue, which is new to me. As a general rule, I avoid new innovations." As we said, that was his family kind of approach. "However, times have changed over the past year, and Jewish workers cannot be found as they could previously. And the workers we have are the very worst quality. They are too hasty, they do not listen to the supervisors, they have caused countless problems. Because of the lack of people, even like this, I've had to approve the use of non-Jewish workers, other than for matzah mitzvah." Yeah? And there are accounts of non-Jewish workers eating sandwiches, bread sandwiches in the matzah factory. Why do they care? Yeah? See, they weren't supervised properly. "Because of all of this, after a great deal of persuasion, I agreed to have one machine brought here many weeks before matzah baking time to examine it and see how it works and what it produces. My bet din and I went to the bakery and saw it in action. We stood for many hours until matzahs were baked, and when we saw that it worked with greater speed than human workers, and that it was possible to supervise the few workers involved and to choose good ones, we agreed to bake with it. As such, last year we added more. However, even the machines require significant and constant supervision to keep them properly clean." And therefore, the Ksav Sofer himself accepts that the quality of machine matzahs is likely to be better. The European Hasidim said, "Excuse me, just because you can't find good workers in Germany, it doesn't mean we can't find good workers in Poland." Interesting. So, but that was an argument that again went back and forth on that basis. The quality was important. A third argument was the hygiene. Go over to the last page. Early days, a number of Rabbanim, including people from the Reform movement, which very interesting, there was correspondence between early Reform rabbis and the Orthodox rabbis on this issue. Many rabbis claimed that actually the hand matzahs were very dirty. The workers didn't wash their hands properly. Some people claimed they were muktzah machmas mius, which is a joke, obviously, but it wasn't a joke in the sense muktzah means something which is disgusting is muktzah on Shabbos or Yom Tov, and they said these hand matzahs, as far as we're concerned, are just not up to par. I brought you a comment in source in footnote 45, Rabbi Kaganov, who is a prominent, very prominent Talmid Chacham, who wrote a piece on this. He writes, I quote, I hope this doesn't put you off your matzahs, "I witnessed someone leaning over the table, busily kneading the dough for his matzah, while beads of perspiration are falling into the dough." Right, so someone considered that to be an advantage. So some would consider that to be a disadvantage. I can tell by your faces which of you think which. But that is an issue with hygiene, and you kind of pay the money, you take your choice. The other issues that come up as follows, that kneading by hand takes more time, the dough is more likely to get warm with people's hands, it's more likely to be left standing, the machine matzahs were constantly on the move. Hand matzahs are uneven, there are bits which are burnt to a crisp, and there are other bits which seem not to have been baked as well. There's more of a concern that you might end up with chometz in something like that. And the machine matzahs is obviously much, much, much thinner, beaten to a, you know, to a crisp, literally, and there's really no chance of them becoming chometz. It's interesting that the gebrochts minhag, not to eat gebrochts, makes much more sense when you think about hand matzahs. And that went with that community, the Hasidim, who don't eat gebrochts, i.e. matzah dipped into liquid. They are the people who were having the hand matzahs, where they were legitimately more of a concern that there may be unbaked dough inside the hand matzah. Whereas the people who didn't eat gebrochts, didn't have a problem with gebrochts, who did eat things mixed with liquid, were the Litvaks, who ate machine matzahs from quite early on, and therefore that kind of correlates and makes much more sense. So where are we now? Well, I think things have calmed down a lot now. We have other things to argue about in 2018. I brought you here the Mishneh Halachas in number 24, the Rav of Ungva, Ulechein, Rav Moshe Klein, yeah, Rav Menashe Klein. Ulechein, Hayori es Davar Hashem lefi ane yisdaiti vada yesh lechush. If you want to be careful with your mitzvahs, you certainly have to be careful not to eat machine matzahs, he says, only eat hand matzahs. Umihu, nevertheless, mikol markam ha'oichel mi machine matzahs. Someone who does eat machine matzahs today, ein lechashvo kerosha. You don't have to assume that they are a wicked person. Oivech has v'sholem be'isser kores, that they are breaking the isser of eating chometz on Pesach, which of course is an isser kores. Or besofek, okay. Ma'achashu oiser al pi horas rab, because they're only following their own rabbis who say they can do this. Or shekibul ma'avosav, or they have a family minag that they eat machine matzahs. The Sfirulein, this person will hold Shekein Halacha, that is the Halacha. Uladata ein kan is a chometz klal. And they hold that that's not a problem. V'chas v'sholem l'chashto b'davar acher. And he says, don't think badly of anyone who eats machine matzahs. You don't have to assume, like maybe 150 years ago, that, ooh, you eat machine matzahs? That's it. I'm not going to marry your daughter. I'm not going to eat your food. Because who knows what you might be? Says Rav Menashe Klein, that those days are long past. People who eat machine matzahs are good holy Jews. Nevertheless, he doesn't think you should, and I brought you, I'm not going to read it in detail, Rav Avadi Yosef says very clearly in 25, he doesn't think you should be eating machine matzahs. He doesn't think they work. He says, b'dieved, maybe you can, but he really wants you to eat hand matzahs. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu took the same line. I think that many of the Sfaradim do eat hand matzahs, but there are other Sfaradi Rabbonim who don't have that concern. Rav Misas had a preference for machine matzahs. I looked in the Pnini Halacha, Rav Eliezer Melamed, and he also writes that it's preferable to have hand matzahs, not machine matzahs. Yes. So I can't hear you, sorry. They have thicker matzahs anyway. But is there such a thing as a thick machine matzah, or does that not exist? Thick matzahs by definition are hand matzahs, right? So they're going to eat hand matzahs more. And therefore, nowadays I think we've settled down into a clear camp one way or the other. Yes.
I've seen the machine myself with a 700 lumen light right in there.
You clean the machines for the machine master?
Yeah, we take the thing apart and it's 100%.
Yeah, that's not really a shiloh that it's 100% clean. I think these days a lot of people just have both, right? Mm-hmm. We have machine masters and we have hand masters for, you know, traditional purposes. Now you can get everything. We have oat masters, spelt matzahs, wheat matzahs, hand matzahs, square matzahs, round matzahs. we have everything under the plate. Soft stuff, whatever matzahs you have, please God, you should have a chag kosher v'sameach, you should have a freilich of Pesach, and you should enjoy Seder night. Chocolate covered matzahs.
Where are your parents?
These are two individuals.